We're here to talk a little about the Jewish attitude towards not parenting, but actually being a child, which is a little interesting about this mitzvah that we're going to discuss tonight, is that sometimes we associate this commandment with a mitzvah that pertains to us when we're in our parents' home. And I'm sure many of us are aware that this is a mitzvah that, how long does this go to? Like, how long do we have to show honor and respect to our parents? Like, till when? It's a trick question.
Until we die.
Or until we die. Because even after they go, and we'll talk about this a little later, there's actually a mitzvah to continue to honor one's parents even after they're no longer alive. Does anybody know how we do that? I'm starting backwards. Anybody know how long mourning usually is? When someone, God forbid, passes away in the family and you're one of the seven close relatives that you'd have to either, what's called, be an avel or sit shiva for, right? So it's usually mourning only lasts. The Talmud says mourning's finished at 30 days. There's no more avelut after 30 days. Except for a parent who passes away.
Not for a kid?
Not for a kid, not for a spouse. So I remember when my mother passed away, felt very strange continuing to say the Kaddish after my dad stopped saying the Kaddish for her. Even though he was a husband, married, knew my mother much longer than I did. But because of the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av V'Em, of honoring parents, which is so important, we're going to see tonight, that it's something that gets added on. Avelut, mourning for a parent, continues for a year. Not on the same level as the month. The month is much more intense. It gets a little more relaxed. But during that year, you're still saying Kaddish, and you're still not going to big parties and events because of the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av V'Em, of honoring parents. But what I'd like to do with you is try to understand the Torah's unique perspective on what can be a very complicated relationship. Parents, children, children, parents, not so simple, if you haven't realized that by now. Take a look on top of the page. We got a volunteer from the thousands of people in our class tonight. Can someone leap forward and volunteer to read this opening verse?
Sure.
Go for it.
Exodus.
Exodus chapter 20, verse 12.
Honor thy father and thy mother in order that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
Okay, so that's the mitzvah to honor. What's the Hebrew word for honor? Kavod. Kabed et avicha veti mecha. Honor your mother, your father and your mother. And it gives you, it says what? It says that your days will be long. Now what does that mean? How will your days be long? Does that mean that anyone honors their parents, they will live longer? I always actually dedicated this class years ago to one of my dearest, closest friends who unfortunately passed away at a very young age. And I never saw someone who honored his parents more than he did. We went to yeshiva together in Israel, and we went to college. And unfortunately he got sick and had to go back home. If anyone has had to live at home during college years, I don't recommend it. It's hard. It's really difficult. And he did it. And I used to go visit him. He lived in Washington. I used to go see him. And I marveled at how much honor and respect he showed his parents in that very difficult time in his life. Very challenging time to be with your parents under the same roof. And he unfortunately passed away at a very young age. So what does this mean? In order that thy days may be long. So whenever it talks in the Torah about arichos yamim, lengthy days, it doesn't necessarily mean quantity of days. It means quality. Your days shall be long. First of all, some of the rabbis referred to the world to come. This is not the only existence. This is not the only place we live, if you will. There is another world. We're going to have a class on that later in the year about the world to come. Please God. But that's also, even in this world, your days will be lengthened. And you know why that is? Because if you show great honor to your parents, and your kids see that, they probably will show great honor to you. There are no guarantees in life. There are always exceptions to every rule. But usually, children mimic what their parents do. Usually ignore what they say, but mimic what they do. And many times, children who are really attentive to their parents when they get older. That's basically what they saw their parents doing. You know, my mother-in-law right now, she should have a refuah shleimah. She's in a nursing rehab place here on the west side. And she became friendly a little with this gentleman who keeps complaining to her that his kids never come and visit. You know, you have this situation. People are just sitting in these nursing homes, you know. So she got further into the discussion about the relationship. This is unfortunately not something that they saw. Now, of course, it's always possible to do the right thing and you model the right behavior and then your kids just don't follow suit. You need a little, you know, mazel and bracha from above also. A little, you know, I don't want to say good luck, but you need some blessing from Hashem as well. But usually, what you put in is what you get. So when it says, if you honor your parents, your days will be long, that means the quality of your life will be greater because you will just have taught your children something that you might need yourself. Let's continue the next verse. Ken, you did such a great job of the first one. Go for it.
You shall fear every man, his mother and father, and my Sabbaths you shall keep. Right. I am the Lord your God.
Okay, now what is the difference between the verse that you just read, these two verses? The first one's from Exodus chapter 20. The second one is chapter 19 of Leviticus. What it was? Point out some differences. Yuri?
The first one seems to be focused on, you know, what am I going to gain out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Second one seems to be focused on, this is the commandment, so just do it.
Right. The first one gives you a little reward. The second one's got no reward. Oh. And what are the other differences? Yeah?
The order.
First of all, there's a reverse in the order. The first verse mentions dad first and then mom. The second verse mentions mom and then dad. What's another difference?
Well, one is about honor, the other is about fear.
Okay, one says honor, the other one says fear, so we have to define those terms. And does it have anything to do with the fact that the order is reversed? And what else is different about the two verses?
In one, the Sabbath is mentioned. The other one,
okay, number two, the Shabbos is mentioned. And the question is, why?
Well, the first one, the Ten Commandments, is the last name of the Ten Commandments, right? So
the first one appears in the Ten Commandments. So? And one of the other Ten Commandments is the Shabbos, therefore I don't put it in there. It's a little weird, though. I mean, the Shabbos has already been mentioned by the book of Leviticus. We mentioned a few times. Why in the verse clearly about honoring or fearing parents does God need to throw in the command to observe the Sabbath? What does one thing have to do with the next? And is there a relationship between that and honor versus fear, and putting mom before dad and dad before mom? That's the question before us. So, first of all, what does it mean to honor? What does it mean to fear? And I'm going to get to that a little later, but I want to try to answer this question first, because Rashi tells us something very, very powerful. Rashi is a great biblical commentator, brings down the Talmudic tradition that the reason it mentions dad before mom when it talks about honoring your parents, and it mentions mom before dad when it talks about fearing your parents, is because, what do you think? Because you're more naturally inclined to do what for who?
More naturally inclined, I guess, to fear your father and honor your
father. Well, yeah, now, in, I guess, more classical, traditional societies, and maybe even in your own home. What is more likely for you to have? Honor is, by the way, take a look on number three. A rabbi's taught, what is fear and what is honor? Fear means that the son must neither stand in the father's place, nor sit in his place or contradict his words, or tip the scales against him. Honor means you must give him food and drink, clothe and cover him, and lead him in and out. We'll get back to that in a little. But why are you more likely to show honor to your mother, but more likely to fear your father? And therefore the Talmud tells us that the Torah goes out of its way to put dad's name first by honor, and mom's name first by fear, because you're more likely to have fear for who? For your father. I remember that when I was little. Wait till your father comes home. Right? And you're yelling and you're screaming at each other, but then dad comes home. Oh. Now, I don't know how much of that is in all, you know, I think in my in-law's house it was just the opposite. My father-in-law, sure, was like the sweeter, calm, and my mother-in-law wore the pants, you know, in the family, so to speak. So there are exceptions, but I think generally, now the Talmud says is because the child spends more time with his mother, and therefore there's going to be a little more of a less of a sense of fear. And what is the Torah teaching us, therefore? You still have to fear your mother, even though you're not feeling that so much for her. And you still have to honor your father, even though you're not feeling that much, you're feeling more of the fear factor. And what we see from here, and this is difficult, is that we are supposed to show both honor and fear to both mother and father, even though the relationships might be very different. And what the Torah is teaching, I think, ultimately, is that whatever your emotional setup is, the Torah is trying to create certain standards. And just because you have a certain kind of feeling for one, doesn't mean that your obligation and your commitment to that person should be more limited than the other. In fact, just the opposite. Because if you are challenged in this, that's why the Torah comes along and says, honor your father. Even though you might be more afraid of him, you're not as happy with him, he's spending less time with you, or your mother, you're less fearful of her, she's always around, I can get away with it, she'll scream and yell a little, but whatever. You know? Dad will be like, you know, it doesn't matter though. You have to show both to both. And I think that's a very, very important idea, because in our world, we very much, we sometimes create the responsibilities out of the emotions. Whereas the responsibilities in the Torah are the responsibilities. And by the way, there are roles. And that's one of the things I think we're uncomfortable with when it comes to dealing with our parents. We don't like roles. One of the things that the Torah tells us, not the Torah itself, but the Talmud explains that we're not technically supposed to do, and I'm not making a judgment if you have this in your family, because many families have this. But we're not supposed to call parents by their first name. Now why? Why is it such a terrible thing? I didn't say it was terrible. But why are we not supposed to call our parents by their first names?
It doesn't connote the status upon anything.
Right, so there's a role and there's a status. And why are we calling our parents by their first names? I assure you, there was probably no society in the world that ever did this before 50 years ago. 100 years ago, let's say. What changed? What do you think? Everybody's got to be equal. Everyone's got to be the same. This kind of goes back to something we were talking about in our class about relationships. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Right? Everybody's the same, everybody's equal. And if you treat anybody a little differently, what we've done is we've taken the wonderful and positive aspects of democracy, of egalitarianism, and we've taken it to the extreme. And we're mulling over important differences. There is a difference between a parent and a child. And now, I'm not saying you call your parent by their first name, you can't have that difference. It's a little more symbolic. But it makes it a little harder when, my best friend. I love, my parent is my best friend. It's okay to be friends, and you should be a little friends with your, children or with your parents. But as one of my relatives used to say, I'm not your friend. I'm your father. I'm not your friend. Now, we can be friendly, and we should have a very loving and amicable relationship, deeper than maybe any other one, except perhaps a spouse. But that doesn't mean we're the same. That doesn't mean we're the same. And when kids are not taught that, that's a big problem. Because then you start having issues with all authority figures. Aristotle wrote this, that when authority is not taught to be respected in the home, it is idle for a person to believe that it will be respected outside of the home. And you know that most of crime that we know of in our society is committed by, unfortunately, kids that didn't have that kind of background and boundaries and role models. I'm not saying they're completely off the hook, but it's understandable on some level when you don't have the authority within here. And what makes us think we're going to be able to have the authority out there? It all starts at home. Very, very important idea that the Torah wants us to observe. Now, at the same time, the Torah is telling us something else with this little Shabbos throw-in. Anybody familiar with this tradition? Why does it mention, and my Sabbaths ye shall keep? And then it says at the end of the verse, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God. We know about you, God. Thank you very much. We've met you before. We've been having a conversation for 2.5 books already. God has to throw, I am Hashem, your God. And by the way, keep my Shabbos, which has been mentioned a few times already. Why does the mention of Shabbos have to be thrown into the verse having to do with honoring parents? And God has to then sort of reintroduce himself. Here I am. What do you think? This is called leading the witness.
Is it connected in some way?
It must be connected.
Do you have to, in order to keep Shabbos, do you have to fear your parents?
You're really supposed to try to keep Shabbat because of your relationship with God, not necessarily your parents. But what if your parents tell you not to keep Shabbos? Let's say you're starting to observe the Sabbath. This is something you see as a value. You want to, or really any mitzvah. And for whatever reason, your mother, your father, they have an axe to grind with Judaism, or they think it's bad for you. You joined a cult, or I don't know what. They think the whole thing is weird. Only those crazy zealots do the Shabbos thing. You can light candles, but you know, not to get in a car or whatever it is. Yeah, that's crazy. And by the way, we want to get together on Friday night. And the only way to get there is for you to drive. And you're like, well, you know, it's the Shabbos, and I don't travel on the Sabbath. Ooh. Son, I think it says, Ishimo Vaviv Tiro. You're supposed to fear your parents, or at least honor us. What does the son say back? But it also, Dad, it also says, Betzos Shabsosai Tishmaru. And my Sabbath you shall keep, Ani Hashem. And Rashi brings down from the Talmudic tradition here that if a parent instructs a child to violate the Sabbath or any of the other 613 mitzvot, because both child and parent are obligated to follow God's will, who trumps? This can get a little sticky. Who trumps? God or your parents? God. Because a parent is also obliged to observe these same laws. Now, let me make a very important caveat before you run out of here and tell your parents that the rabbi said you can disregard everything they have to say if it's in the name of Judaism, okay? If a person is so unfortunate, this is the way Rav Hirsch writes, as to have to be disobedient to a parent, it should be made 100% clear that the child is only doing this because they're trying to comply with a higher command from God himself, not because they are trying to show disrespect or somehow become disobedient to a parent. It's only because we're being obedient to the ultimate parent, which we're going to get to in a minute, that this halakha applies. And even then, a person has to be very careful with the way it's phrased and very respectful with the way this is being shared. But at the same time, the Ani Hashem Elokecha, I'm the Lord your God, is something that really all people are bound to. Now it's interesting. Let's get to the philosophy a little. Look at section number 4. Why you see a certain seriousness here? There's a lot of seriousness, and there's only really one exception to you know, to not listening to your parents, and that's if you need to listen to God, if you will. Why do you think this is so important? To be so obedient. There are crazy stories in the Talmud about all these great rabbis who work so hard on being, you know, good sons to their mothers, to their fathers. There's one story about this great Talmudic sage who used to lie on the floor because the floor was very cold. So when his mother would get up, she wouldn't have to walk directly on the floor. These are like very extreme stories. Another story of a well-known rabbinic figure who was seated amongst Roman nobles. He was obviously a very important person. And his mother came and hit him across the back of his head and spit in his face in front of the whole group. And he just sat there and did nothing. He took it. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, that this is not a license for abuse. And we're going to get to that because there is no excuse for that either. A parent is not permitted to be abusive. And a parent should try not to make this mitzvah so difficult for their child to keep. But why is it that the Torah wants us to treat a parent almost like who? Almost like God himself. If you take a look at the passage in the Talmud there in section number 4, Kedushin 30b, just follow with me. It says, our rabbis taught there are three partners in man. The Holy One, blessed is He, God. the father and the mother. When a man honors his father and his mother, the Holy One blessed is he, says, I'll ascribe merit to them as though I had dwelt among them and they had honored me. It's a very beautiful idea. God says, the Talmud says that there are really three partners in creation. Right? You think mom and dad just created you. They did, physically. But who took care of the spiritual component? So Hashem was involved in that. And when a child shows respect and honor to a parent, God says, it's as though they had honored me. Why? So I like to use the analogy of like the president or the vice president. Right? If the Manhattan Jewish Experience is expecting the president to come because many presidents throughout the administrations have come to Manhattan Jewish Experience and paid their respects. No, we've never had a president here. But let's say the president wanted to come and he has to cancel his trip and instead he sends Joseph Biden is going to come. And, you know, we're going to be able to receive the vice president. Would we not also put out the red carpet for Biden? He's like, nah, it's the vice president. No, we would show him the same respect. Why? Because he represents the office of the presidency. And that's the way I understand this passage in the Talmud. Who are your parents, really? Think about it for a minute. There is God, of course. But then there's your, I don't want to say your God here, but there's God's messenger, if you will, who brought us into creation and is on some level serving as an agent, as an ambassador for the Almighty. And so therefore, to the degree that we show honor to our parents, is in a way showing honor to Hashem. And to the degree that we diss them, is in a way kind of like being a little off-putting, you know, to God. Now, that doesn't mean that if they do something terrible or something wrong, and they have limits, right? Because they can't tell you to do something which ethically is problematic. If it goes against God's will, right, we just studied before. But short of that, they carry a lot of weight as far as Judaism is concerned. And it really matters the way we treat them, the way we speak to them or about them. And I want to just refer your attention now to section 3, where we finally get the definition. Anybody want to read this? We got another volunteer. Anybody? You ready to go for it? It's section 3. Our rabbis taught.
What is the word son? Fear means that he, the son, must neither stand in his father's place nor sit in his place nor contradict his words. Honor means that he must give him food and drink, clothe and cover him, lead him in and out. The honor really sounds like it's mostly revolving around him in old age.
Older parents, yeah. Isn't that interesting? Honor is that you're supposed to give food and drink, clothe and cover, lead him in and out. Now, is that only for someone that needs? Is that only someone that needs it? I mean, it seems to imply that, but it does make it pretty clear that this mitzvah continues even as we get older, our parents get older.
Let's tip the scales again.
So let's talk about fear for a minute. Does that mean you're supposed to, you know, get your kids to quake in their boots every time you walk into the room? Like, what is fear? stand in their father's place or sit in their place. Has anybody ever had that in their home? Did anyone ever have that in their home? Your father had like, at least they call it the Archie Bunker chair. You know, it's like the famous chair. But
my father used to change his chair.
Oh, he would. All right, so he confused you. But technically, you're not supposed to sit in your father's seat unless he gives you permission, or stand in his place, assuming he had some sort of special place. Contradict his words. What does that mean? How are we supposed to have a normal relationship with our parents if we can't contradict their words?
I think it's in public.
Okay, so contradict their words would mean that in public, if there's an argument going on, you can't publicly side with a position that will ultimately sort of tip the scales against them. Now, does that mean you can't, in private, express your opinion even if you know it's different? Of course you can express your opinion. And you can say, I respectfully disagree.
So could you be a Republican and he's a Democrat?
You could. You could for sure do that. And we have that situation. I'm sure a lot of families have it. Makes for interesting dinner talk. But let's say, could you run against your father? That's an interesting question. Could you run against your father?
So according to this, could you ever speak out like publicly and get a different opinion? Because, I mean, if you read it, it says, nor tip the scales against him, but that's a separate, like, it's a separate, like, section of the sentence. Like, is that nor?
Yeah, no, no, it's a separate prohibition to contradict his words. But some of this is more form over substance. I mean, I don't know if there's a technical prohibition in viewing a different, in airing a different viewpoint. Contradict his words is really just like coming up against them. But if there's an important issue and you have a different viewpoint, I don't think there's anything wrong with expressing that different viewpoint, even if it contradicts the father's viewpoint. I think it's more like proving your father wrong in a way that's embarrassing and in a way that's demeaning. It's not respectful. I think that's really what it means. And,
I see it as one of these old schools, like if he makes a decision, the family's going to go in a particular direction, you have to follow that.
Right. I mean, that's very important. And the question is, how long does that last? And does it apply to everything? And I'll give you an example. Let's say your father does not agree with your choice of mate. And he says, I forbid you from marrying this girl. So do you have to actually... So this actually happened?
When it says like you should cleave to your...
Yeah, we read that verse a few weeks ago, that you should leave... Well, I don't know if that particular verse touches on this exactly. You know, the verse that Alison is quoting, it says that... Al-Ken Yazov Ish et Imov et Aviv, a person will therefore leave his mother and his father, Vidavak Pishto, and become one flesh with his wife.
I thought it said something different. I mean, it was
more than
one.
No mama's boys.
Right. I mean, why can't this touch on that, though? Meaning, whether leaving, if that, I mean, to loosely translate it that way.
It could be, I mean... Leaving, that's a little too metaphorical, I think. I mean, what does it mean to leave? I think that's talking about a more of an emotional attachment. That in order to give yourself to your partner, you need to not be in the same place with your parents as you were when you were a child. It's more of a psychological thing. What's that? Yeah. Now, what about... So, Rav Soloveitchik is a true story, one of the greatest rabbis of our generation... received a very disturbing letter from his father. He was still in Europe, the son, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. This is many years ago. His father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, was already a professor of Talmud at Yeshiva University. And he had written a letter to his father telling him of his decision to become engaged to this woman who later became his wife, Tanya Soloveitchik. And Rav Moshe didn't like her. The father didn't like the girl. So he wrote back that he didn't want him to marry her. And there's a famous letter written back by the son, who was already a great Torah scholar, but he was probably in his early 20s, who wrote back, explaining all the reasons why he doesn't have to listen to his father in this instance. And there are times when there are exceptions.
Is he right?
He was correct, because it all depends on why the father or the parent objects. If it's something objective... If it's something clearly objective that the Torah itself views as really negative, then the father's or mother's opinion would have to be heeded to. But it appeared that the reasons, it's not 100% clear the reasons why Rav Moshe was not into his son's choice of mate, but it didn't appear, it appears from the letter back that those reasons were not objective, that they were more simply from the perspective of his father and the kind of family and girl that they wanted and or expected him to end up with. And it was very interesting because Tanya Soloveitchik had a PhD, she had a doctorate. This is a long time ago. We're talking about in the early to mid-1900s. She had a PhD. Oh yeah, for a woman to have a PhD, a religious woman. And the Soloveitchik family was just not as... That part of the Soloveitchik family, because it changed. They were very anti-Zionist, and they were also not into women's scholarship and studying as much. Rav Chaim or Rav Moshe, the Rav was very, very different. The Rav was the son who married this woman, was the first to teach Talmud to women in America. and also left the Aguda and joined the Mizrahi because of his Zionist inclinations. So they were quite different, but because he was able to argue that there was nothing objectively problematic from a Torah perspective to this girl, you know, in choosing this girl, that he could defy his father's wishes. So it's not like your parents say anything and you have to listen to them. The gray area comes in is like when, how do you know when it's really something objective or it's just their craziness? I'll tell you one other story.
So if they can't point to
it
in the Torah,
then you'd be like, if they can't point to the Torah, then... You know, but here's the other thing. It also matters how distressed it's going to make your parents. So, this is a long time ago, during the Gulf War, I was in college. The Saddam Hussein, Scud missiles. And, what's that, 1991. So somebody charted a flight. Somebody charted a flight hey guys, welcome.
Are we having a concert?
We're going to have a little music here soon. I like the last couple of lines of my, you know, speech to have a little musical accompaniment, so we worked this whole thing out. I'll tell you the key to start with in a moment. So I wanted to go to... They were shutting down all flights. There were no flights going into Israel because it became dangerous. The State Department said that it was a dangerous place. So nobody was traveling to Israel. It was January 15th that the... President Bush Sr. said that if Saddam Hussein doesn't get out of Kuwait, the United States is attacking. Nobody was flying to the Middle East. Except a couple of wealthy Jewish people chartered a flight and offered $50 tickets to anyone who would go to Israel on January 15th. In Yeshiva University, my friend was selling the tickets from his dorm room. I wanted to go. My mother was freaking out. She didn't want me to go. And I called my rabbi and I said, listen, what do I do here? It's Israel, we need to show Israel support. There's 300 other people going on this flight. They filled up the plane. But my mother's really going, you know. So he said, it really depends on how upset she is. How much tzar, you're not permitted to cause a parent anguish. That's really something you want to try to stay away from. But if it's something that you're following a certain value in the Torah, then that's what it is. But is it a mitzvah? Was I fulfilling a mitzvah by getting on that plane? Is it like my parents telling me to violate the Shabbos? No, it's different. But it was a little more of a gray area. And the advice I got was stay put and raise money for Israel here. And my mother and I went to Super Sunday and raised money for the UJA. They sent money and they took a picture of us. We became like the poster children for UJA. Really, there was a shot of us. It was that Sunday. It became like a famous poster that they were using to... whatever, it doesn't really matter about the poster, but I was very excited about that. Anyway, the point is, it could get a little gray. One or two things, then we got to close up here because the band's going to start to play. This, by the way, is for our Cafe Connect. Right? That's why you guys are here? It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being here. So we talked about, take a look at the bottom of the page, we're going to finish this up. Responsibility, we know, extends to aged parents. Does this apply to step-parents? Yes, the mitzvah of honoring parents actually does apply to step-parents. What about parents who are divorced? Does that change anything? No, it doesn't change anything. Brothers, grandparents, and parents-in-law are also included in the mitzvah, but not on the same level. So if you have a choice between showing honor to a parent or grandparents, your parents actually come first. But I would imagine your parents would want you to show honor to the grandparents first. But they, I'm not going to get into this right now because it's very late and we're over our time. But if, God forbid, a child is being abused, that doesn't mean a child continues to have to listen to the parent. A child is permitted to call the authorities and to do what he or she needs to do to take themselves out of harm's way, even if it means that their parents go to jail. And a child can actually testify against a parent if it's the only way to protect themselves against the parent. That's obviously a very extreme case. The best, you know, it would be better to obviously try to reconcile the situation. And of course, I mentioned before, now wounding a parent is very serious. You're not supposed to lift a hand to a parent. And if you're a doctor, you shouldn't operate on your parent. Because it might be, you have to create a wound in order to heal, unless you're so much better than everyone else. And that's the way to give them the best medical care. And finally, last, We mentioned this before, that honoring parents even continues to apply after they're no longer with us physically in this world. On their yard site, we say the Kaddish, we give charity in their memory. Anytime we say their name, we say their memory should be a blessing, Zichrona Levracha. We continue to show great honor. And the best honor you can show any parent who's not alive is to follow their life example, because you're really perpetuating who they are in another world, which is really amazing. I don't want to... any other last questions? What's that? Okay, we'll schmooze afterwards. You're all welcome to stick around here. When are you guys starting to play?
Soon.
When you're done.
When I'm done. We're waiting for you to finish. You guys are also welcome to have some food. Please help yourselves. We replenished a little. Have a little. And we're going to, please God... I think this is the fourth in our little series, but we're going to be continuing every Monday night. You'll get a notification. Actually, what is next Monday night? We might have a break. Just follow the emails. What's that? It's the 23rd.
Is Mary Mouse there?
24. Hey. 24. Okay, we will let you know. We have all of your information. Everyone here gets their email?
Too many emails, probably. But you get them. Okay, cool. We'll let you know for next week. Thank you all for joining. I'm sticking around if anybody has any other questions about moms, dads, brothers, and sisters. What's that? Yeah. It's okay. We're an intimate group. Go for it.
In section 3, when the divorce happened, it refers to the father.
Right. Where? Yeah, I don't.
It's just because there's like it's not complete separation.
And what's the context there? When a man honors his father and it says mother and father.
His father's place.
It says don't sit your father.
Oh, it applies to both. Applies both. Now there is what were you gonna ask? No.
And you said one of the reasons we should respect our parents because they brought us here. So how about like parents that they adopt kids?
Same thing. That's a very good point. The Talmud.
Because God partnered with them in creating
kids. Yeah, that's a good point. The Talmud says that anyone who raises another person's child, that child becomes like their own, and therefore you have to give the parent, even though they're not biological parents, they're adopted, the same kind of respect and honor. But the way you phrase that was a famous Bill Cosby line. You know, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. That's what he used to say to everybody. But it even applies to an adopted parent. An adopting parent. So honor your parents. It's not easy. This would be considered one of the most difficult mitzvot, because given most family dynamics, it ain't so not so simple.
What about a father and son who are both rabbis, who both write books? Like, could they write books that oppose each other?
Yeah, yeah.
Because like that's
yeah. Because you'd never be able to have a proper like Talmudic debate, you know, if you had that constraint. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's all the way it's being done. It's not like, you know, like or like, let's say you want to base Medrash. And they're arguing, and there's people around. A kid can't get up and say, you're wrong because of it, you know? It has to be done privately, it has to be done in a respectful way.
Well, if you openly write the book that, let's say, interprets the Gemara one way.
Right. And my father
the other one
it a different way, I think that would be okay.
No, let's say the other one interprets it the